have given war, pestilence, hate, greed, judgment, ego, self-sufficiency a good try and have failed. We need a new paradigm that consists of kindness, courtesy, justice, love, and respect in all our relationships. Work hard.
That was Dr. George Tiller, assassinated May 31st, 2009, in his own church on Sunday. Thanks to Mark Bretzfelder for that videotape. And that does it for our broadcast. Also, thanks to Cheryl Chasteen, the medical director and primary abortion provider at Southwind Women's Center in Wichita, Kansas, the former clinic of Dr. George Tiller. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Rourke, Renee Feldstar, Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karen, Dina Gesser, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Our website is democracynow.org.
You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284 AL, Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its management, staff, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll tap into mobile technology to keep ahead of pest problems, bask in the light of the Solanaceae family, and reap the benefits of a fertilizer anyone can make at home for free. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment, 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored designs and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
And thanks once again to our wonderful underwriters who keep us on the air, to all the listeners, the birds, the bees, the sunlight, and my dear friend Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
How are you this fine day?
I'm doing great. I'm going to just send that same blessing out to the hands of all the growers out there.
Yeah.
And the feet who like to walk through the garden. A good friend of mine always says the best food for the garden is the shadow of the gardener.
Indeed it is. And how about a shout out to the joints? It keeps us, flexible enough to reach to the top of the tool shed for that amendment that we've tucked high up in the cool eaves, as well as bending down low to capture a little weed that might have bypassed our hoe or something that we need to get at ground level. Give thanks to the flexibility that gardening gives us.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are excited to share many things with you, and we're going to start by sharing our appreciation of the celestial influences in our celestial session for today. It's the 4th of June. Grateful to be in the month of June. It sure has snuck up on us, and while we are still in the rainy season here on Kauai,
yes, we are.
Even in the quote-unquote summertime, we're still in rainy season and getting a lot of those blessings. And we're getting the blessings of the celestial influences. So we're going to look at the Hawaiian moon calendar, and this moon phase today brought to us by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a publication of the Hanalei Watershed Hui. Thank you so much, Maka'ala and the team there, for bringing that to Kauai, and very specifically focusing in on the Ahupua'a of Hanalei, which is also a place that a lot of research is done in terms of keeping measurements, and the very specific measurements of the rising and the setting of the moon and the sun are done in Hanalei. And so we're going to look at our Hawaiian moon phase today. It's once again, we have Ole Kulua, and this is in the Ho'onui, or first Anahulu, the first week in the Hawaiian month. And Ole Kulua rose just a few moments ago at 11:52 a.m. She will reach her transit, or highest point in the sky, at 6:12 this evening, and she'll set at 12:30. 41% or so of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated, and we will be welcoming in the first quarter moon tomorrow at about 10:40 a.m. Regular listeners of this program will know by now that the Ole moons, which occur both in the waxing and waning portions of the moon cycle, are unproductive for planting. According to the Hawaiian moon calendar system, good planting days are going to return again with the arrival of the moon Huna, which rises on Saturday in the mid-afternoon. So no planting recommendations for today. Rather, this is a good day for preparations in the garden, cleaning, weeding, compost making, maybe tidying up the greenhouse like we just did over there at the community garden in Kalihiwai, just making things right and ready for those good planting days to come.
Mm-hmm. I've got a big pile of mulch that's looking at me right now. It's probably a good day to get on that.
It needs to get spread.
That's right.
All right.
Indeed. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, the same goes, interestingly enough. Today and tomorrow, the moon will be in Leo, yet other aspects make it unproductive for planting, so they're not recommending any planting at this time. Although Friday through Sunday, the moon will move into Virgo, an earth sign, making it a great time to plant our root plants. So just in line with the Hawaiian calendar, root plants we could plant right about now would be beets, taro, and I suppose you could still squeak in a very, very late planting of ginger and turmeric. And I'll remind you, like I did last time, that the later in the season it gets, the larger the seed piece you want to be using in order to get a really nice yield when your plants are come to fruition at the end of the year.
Yes, and the uhi, I think I mentioned this maybe a week or two ago, but the uhi aerial tubers that I have stored are definitely sprouting now, so this is a good time. And you'd mentioned the biodynamic calendar recommending for roots this weekend with Virgo, and Huna means hidden, and that is good for plants that hide in the soil. So that's the recommendation for tubers that lines up very nicely with the biodynamic system.
We love it when that happens. And Monday and Tuesday, the moon will be in Libra, although yet still unproductive for planting there. So looks like we have plenty of preparation time this week to do some other tasks besides actually marrying our young plants with their new home in the garden.
Yes, indeed. So that's our celestial session for the day, and we're going to jump into notable news now. And our dear friend, Dr. Scott Nelson, over at the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture, he joins us now and again when we do a pest problem solve focus on one of our plant families, and he's always jumping to our aid with various sustainable, ecologically minded strategies for preventing pests or limiting them. And he uses high technology as well, and we want to focus in and give a highlight to a new application that he has released for mobile devices, and it's called the Leaf Doctor app. This app allows users to take a picture of a diseased leaf and then calculate the area of disease coverage on it, and working with researchers and folks who know more about plant diseases, we could actually track whether a disease is increasing in a field, decreasing. Pretty cool technology. This new app, another free app, all of his apps are free. Join a couple of other ones that he's had out. Plant Doctor, he's had out for quite some time, where you can take a picture of your diseased plant and send it to him for a free evaluation. Amazing. From anywhere around the world. And another one that was recently introduced, which is called Pick a Papaya, where he and another researcher are working on tracking the extent of the papaya ring spot virus epidemic throughout the Hawaiian Islands and wondering how prevalent it really is. And so they have this application so folks can take pictures of their papayas, and if they suspect perhaps they have an outbreak of papaya ring spot. But of course, papayas, like so many crops in Hawaii, are beset with many kinds of diseases that people might mistake for ring spot virus. So they're doing this research project with all of the citizen scientists who have this application on their mobile device. And then also exciting too, the Plant Doctor app, which has been out for quite a while, was instrumental in discovering a new virus afflicting coffee. So it was a coffee farmer who noticed something new and was able to very easily send a picture to Dr. Nelson for identification that actually identified this new outbreak of a virus. And hopefully with that early detection, then we can take preventative actions. So thanks again to Dr. Scott Nelson and for the College of Tropical Agriculture to support him in his work to empower all of us to work together to stay on top of the challenges that we face with our gardening and farming efforts.
Well, pretty brilliant, because the world is very into social networking right now, and brilliant to move it into the plant world and the farming world. It's a venue people like, that's obvious, and it's just a great service that he's doing. I just think that's fantastic.
Thank you, Scott. Looking forward to having you on the show again. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. Coming up in this hour, we're going to dip into the delicious and intoxicating realm of the plant family named for the most influential heavenly body, the sun. We're going to get around to that, but right now we're going to pay homage to truly one of the most valuable, in terms of its multi-use as well as delicious and suitable for backyard gardeners or farmers, one of our wonderful fresh-picked selections by Robin.
Yeah, and the tree is so understated and so powerful. I'm talking about the soursop. You've seen them. They're huge. They're intimidating. On the table at the farmer's market, you're wondering, God, can I eat that whole thing? I don't know. Do I really like it? Well, I'm here to let you know that Annona muricata, otherwise known as the soursop, related to fruits such as the cherimoya and the sugar apple, is just a powerhouse. It's an absolute powerhouse. It's native to Ecuador, as are most of the annonas, and it is popular and very common at the farmers market. We're starting to see them. This is definitely getting into their season, so we're going to see lots of them now. They don't have much of a shelf life. So when you're looking at the market and you want to pick one, you want to look for ones that are blemish-free, not too soft, just a full, firm fruit. And basically keep them on the countertop to ripen. They don't like chilling, kind of like bananas. Their skin gets a chilling injury in the refrigerator, will turn brown, kind of impedes the natural ripening process. So with some fruits, we can kind of stave off their ripening, like an avocado, by refrigerating it. It's just not the same for bananas. If you've ever put bananas in the fridge, you know they just turn black really quick. So want to look for fruits like that, and really best eaten out of hand. and sifted through for the seeds in your mouth. And I will say that the seeds, there's a lot of fruit planters out there, seed planters. Now you eat a really fantastic fruit and you go, wow, I'd love to grow one of those. Well, I've found best results with sprouting these seeds fresh out of the fruit. So pretty much right after you eat them, get them into some moist soil, and they'll germinate pretty readily. They don't do as well when they've sat around for a while.
Mm-hmm. And there seems like there's such a great variability in terms of the quality of the fruit.
It's true.
I know most people do grow them from seed, which is unusual with a fruiting tree in Hawaii. Most things where we prefer to maintain the quality of the fruit, we would grow from a graft or a cutting or some sort of vegetative propagation, but it seems that people kind of go after the seed with this, and I don't know what determines the variability, but there's everything from just sweet and melting and delicious and juicy to sort of pithy and...
They can be fibrous. That's not a desirable quality as far as I'm concerned. They do have a kind of a sweet tart balance going on for themselves. So I'm not sure. I haven't done my research to know how true an annona would go from seed, if you're going to get exactly what your parent fruit looked like or not. So that's a place where we all can do some learning. But what's interesting also is that the leaves of this plant are extremely powerful when made into a tea. And all over the world, in South America, where the plant is also called guanabana, the tea of the leaves is used as a powerful anti-cancer medicine. And the tea of the leaves and the fruits also have anti-malarial type activity going on, which is pretty cool. There's a really impressive nutritional profile. I won't go into all the details because there's just too much to say, but high in vitamin C and B complex vitamins. They balance our sodium and potassium ratio inside of our own bodies, potassium being very important to us. And the polyphenols there's lots of polyphenols, too many to list here, and those are what carry these great properties for us. So if you're not into eating them out of hand, you can put them through a juicer. That's a good way to make a kind of a non... A lighter juice out of it, or we can go through the painstaking process of removing all the seeds and using them in a smoothie or to make a sorbet of sorts. I find it goes well with lime and coconut and a little sweetener, perhaps, depending on the sweetness of the soursop to begin with.
And if you're lucky like me, you have a friend like Paul who makes ice cubes out of them and drops them off every now and again. When I've been a good guy or something, I don't know why I deserve them, but
nice.
They're really delicious like that. And how many times I've encountered folks on vacation who bought one at the farmer's market, not because they knew what it was. It was just the most interesting thing they saw at the market, and it was just kind of sitting there, and they didn't know what to do with it. But soursop, delicious, good for you. The ground seeds can be used to as an insect control. They can expel parasites. There are so many healthful things about this tree. I've also discovered recently that they will produce rather well in a part sunny and even sort of a crowded situation, which we often find when we're eager and we plant our fruit trees too close together. But soursop seems to do quite well in a variety of different situations, loves a full sun position where it can do its whole thing, but if it's cramped and crowded, it's still going to make some fruit for you. So
yeah, it's really sturdy like that. So cheers to the soursop. Check them out.
Give thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for tuning in today to In the Garden on the Farm. We're really grateful to continue on the tradition that was started all the way back at the beginning of KKCR. Earlier today, we were looking at some old photographs of some of the first people who put the station together, and just a lot of gratitude for the people who started this vision and continue on, who serve on the board of directors, who serve on the community advisory board, and all the various committees, the staff here, all of the volunteer programmers. It's great to be part of the tradition. And the garden show was right there in the beginning. And so Robin and I are honored and touched that we get to carry on that tradition and help to evolve it into hopefully a forum that is useful to you, the listeners. We welcome your feedback, and we want to invite you to drop us a line in the email format, quite easy, inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com is our email address. And if you have any suggestions or comments or questions, send it to us, inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com, and we look forward to hearing from you because we're really here to serve you. We care a lot about making sure that this program is full of information that's useful and interesting to you, and that's kind of our mission. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, and spreading the good word. We're trying really hard to keep it positive. I know myself, when I look into notable news, so often it's just really not good news out there. So we really do our best to bring forth really positive news that's inspiring to us to keep us going. Anybody who was at Xavier Rudd the other night knows, like, we really need to be together on this and help support one another. So that's what we like to do for you. And with no further ado, let's head into our new plant family for the month of June. We're going to be talking about this for a few weeks this month. Solanaceae being the nightshade family, largely.
And isn't it funny that Solanaceae is sort of the sun family, but it's the nightshade?
Yes, and we can get
in. The sun and the night.
Absolutely. We can get into a discussion of why they're called nightshades at some point in our deliberations about Solanaceae. I like to always go a little outwards. It is in the superorder of Solaniflorae, which is a huge superorder, and the order Solanales. And so interesting to me that we talk a lot about potatoes and sweet potatoes, and so often I've been so ready to say, well, the sweet potato is just not related to the regular potato at all.
Well, it's a completely different family, we've said over and over.
Over and over again. And it actually turns out that the Convolvulaceae family, or the Morning Glory sweet potato family, is extremely closely related to the Solanaceae family and definitely sits in the same order with it together. So glad to know about that. And most of the plants that we like to talk about are in the Solanum genus, the genus called Solanum. And these are all manners of tomatoes, eggplants, and peppers, among many, many others.
Lots of tropical and subtropical plants, a lot of the garden vegetables that are grown even in the very temperate areas originated in those places. Tomatoes first cultivated in Mexico, but from Central South America. In the pepper tomato family, we've got about 90 genera, 2,800 species, somewhere between there and maybe 4,000 on the most. Amazing to think there are still many plant species that have never been discovered yet by humans that are still in the depths of the Amazon basin. Thank goodness there are places we've not been yet. They consist of shrubs, herbs, woody vines, and occasionally trees. This plant family is characterized by having many toxic parts, even in the food plants, so we need to be really careful about what we eat, and especially when we have these plants growing in our garden that the kids know and the dogs know. Dog education classes about this kind of thing. They can be tricky to grow because they are often susceptible to root knot nematodes, which we have just a profusion of here in our Hawaii soils. They do have a global distribution, but they are mainly from tropical and subtropical areas. And just focusing in on our native species, we do have 9 native species in Solanaceae in the Hawaiian Islands, 8 on Kauai. And some of those notable ones would be Lycium sandwichense, Ohelo kai, which is the Hawaiian wolfberry, which is indigenous, and probably edible, but I can't say for sure. Then we have a series of trees, Aiea, which is the Nothocestrum genus, which is actually an endemic genus, meaning all of the members of that genus only exist in the Hawaiian Islands. We do have a very rare one that's only on Kauai, which is known from the Kalalau Lookout and other places that have diverse mesic forest, and probably would be good candidates for cultivation, although they do grow at a bit higher elevation, so whether or not we could grow them here in the lowlands is unknown, but the trees seem quite hardy otherwise. Then there's also an interesting plant in the Solanum genus, Solanum nelsonii, which is known as Akia, along with some other beech plants. This is a sprawling beech plant that is thought now to be extinct on Kauai and throughout about half of its range in the Hawaiian Islands, although it's so common in the other parts of the Hawaiian Islands, it's not actually considered endangered, but it is going extinct over a longer period of time. So it is considered vulnerable.
Can I just ask for clarification? Is it extinct in the wild? But in cultivated landscapes, still there?
Extinct in the wild on Kauai, but still extant Molokai and, I can't remember the other islands, but certainly throughout part of the northwest Hawaiian Islands, it's still very common on the island of Nihoa, which is the closest of the northwest Hawaiian Islands. And how much it's cultivated? I'm not sure.
So it's not the Akia that I would have used in my landscape planting.
No, that is a completely different family plant. Yeah, which is not coming to me in this moment.
It's okay.
Yeah. And then the last one I'll mention, Solanum sandwichense, Popolo akai ai ake akua. Popolo ai ake akua, which means the food of the gods. And I can only wonder, was this plant used for its psychoactive qualities by native Hawaiians? It's thought to be poisonous, but of course, it's many of those toxic or poisonous components that have psychoactive qualities to them. And so maybe this plant was used in some rituals or ceremonies that has just been either hidden or lost in time.
Would it be the popolo that I see growing as a garden weed?
Again, no. That is a common indigenous plant, which is very important in the La'au Lapa'au tradition of Hawaiian medicinal plant healing.
Dark berries.
Correct.
Yes.
And so there are several native plants that have popolo as a common name, but with sometimes a more specific name like Popolo Ayakeakua in this instance. So this is a very, very rare plant. It's known, I believe, only from on Kauai. It's known from only two islands and only from the Alakai Plateau. And it is being grown very successfully at Limahuli Garden in their lower preserve section. Got to see several very healthy plants. Those plants are self-incompatible, so you need a population of them cross-pollinating each other. And again, potentially extremely toxic, potentially psychoactive. Hard to say, hard to know.
Sure.
Don't want to be the person who experiments, but maybe the chemists can tell us what's going on there.
Sure.
So as well, again, just to remind folks, we're talking about Solanaceae. This is the tomato pepper family, and we're talking about some of the plants that are native here within the family. We also have a number of naturalized species, 28 in Hawaii and only half that on Kauai. So a lot of naturalized or invasive plants that haven't quite reached the shores of Kauai that are probably coming. One of the ones that we know from the Nepali coast, and I do see it in other places, is the cockroach berry. And so it looks like a cherry tomato, but it's covered with spines and is often called Sodom's apple, but that's actually another member of Solanum that actually has a yellow fruit, not a bright orange fruit, but very ornamental and heavily spined. And apparently The fruit can be used to kill cockroaches, is why it has the name cockroach berry. And then there, finally, Solanum viridae was a Polynesian introduction. Not known exactly how it was used here in Hawaii, but records say that in ancient Fiji, the leaves were used for wrapping human flesh for baking, and the fruit was used as a sauce for consuming the same. The Latin synonym, and we had a call out from one of our listeners to really don't leave out the Latin for the folks who enjoy that, but one of the synonyms or alternate names for this plant in the botanical nomenclature is Solanum anthropophagorum, and anthropophagorum means Solanum anthropomorphagorum means Solanum to eat with man. So it's the cannibal's tomato, essentially.
Incredible.
So I'm glad we don't see that all over the Hawaiian Islands.
Sure.
It seemed to be a rare delicacy.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I'm going to get a little bit to the more pedestrian stuff here. potatoes, white Irish potatoes, we know as Solanum tuberosum. Again, this one goes out to the Latin lovers. I've grown Solanum tuberosum with good results here, growing at the correct time of year.
And you actually send away 4 seed potatoes?
I do not. I did once, okay, and I did terrible with them, because I think I planted them at the wrong time. All the mainland planting information will have you plant them in the fall, and my plants languished winter after winter after winter, and then it finally occurred to me they're called solanums because they're long season plants and they actually prefer springtime. And it was a trip I took to South America watching the potato plants in full bloom in the middle of the summer made me realize, oh, I should be planting these in the springtime here. Now I have really good success. I don't grow them year after year, but there's just such a treasure in digging up a new potato and eating it like that night. And you don't realize how musty the grocery store potatoes taste until you've tasted one that's just fresh out of the ground. It's really so supremely different.
And so what do you use for those seed? If you're not getting them from sort of the seed supplier, you go to the market to get...
You know, I'll buy organic potatoes, and I do have a soft spot for fingerlings and the smaller potatoes. So I'd like to start with organic ones, but, you know, once in a while, maybe there's one that's not an organic potato that's sitting on the, this is basically what happens. They're sitting on the countertop and they start sprouting. And me as a planter, it's just, they're just tugging on me, plant me, put me in the ground. Look, I want to grow.
And don't they become poisonous potatoes when they sprout? You shouldn't eat them.
I don't know about that, but I do know that when a potato is exposed to direct sunlight, the skin will turn green, and the green potatoes are toxic. You don't want to eat the green potatoes. So we will talk more about good growing techniques for all these solanums, but you want to keep the tubers covered up with soil in the ground, and that's why they're hilled traditionally for growing, because where the actual potato is subjected to direct sunlight, it will turn green, and that does make it toxic. Mm-hmm. And there's also the tomatoes, Solanum lycopersicum, which I think is also a beautiful name. Eggplants are Solanum melongena. There's the capsicum genus, there's physalis, which is the ground cherry, lovingly known here as the poha berry, a delicious, incredible, basically pasture weed, giant plant, just absolutely monstrous, with tons of husked fruits similar to the tomatillo, also sharing that same genus. And then another genus, maybe not as well-known as a nightshade, but Nicotiana, which includes the smoking tobaccos and also the flowering tobaccos, which are quite lovely in evening-scented flowers. Really beautiful.
And grown as a commercial crop right here on Kauai, grown for the cigar industry. There's one farmer up in Kapahi, who I read in a recent article in the Garden Island, has 6 fields around the island now where he's cultivating many different varieties of tobacco very successfully.
Far out.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Indeed it is. So in addition, let's see, we're going to drop, so just to let you know, we are going to drop in with some more detail into the tomato realm and the pepper realm later in this conversation, but we're going to keep going on the breadth of the Solanum family, or the Solanaceae family, I should say. And there are some other members in Solanum, the genus, that are receiving some attention in terms of cultivation here on Kauai. Solanum quituens, or the naranjila.
Yes.
Do you have any experience growing this plant?
I don't, but I have a friend who's Thai, and she grows it specifically because she likes to mash the fruits into her chili paste. Yeah.
Well, this is a beautiful purple-tinged, purple-haired plant with broad leaves, a very large herb, and I've been seeing it growing with much success out of the side of a compost pile over at One Song Farm. And I was reading that this plant is especially susceptible to nematodes, so give it up once again to Sun and Lisa for knowing the right thing to do. Nematodes do not like compost piles, so growing it out of the compost pile is exactly what has kept that plant so healthy and strong. And I haven't had a fruit myself, but I'm talking with the other folks at the farm there, and they've been sampling off of that plant. Another relative, the cocona, which is a yellow-fruited tomato-like fruit, similar to the naranjila, and reported to have no thorns, but that was that really frightening plant that I got seeds from over from the Big Island, and it was the most heavily armored plant I've ever seen at a small size, and I imagined a barefoot stepping on it, and after I imagined that, I destroyed all the seedlings because I was afraid of this plant. But apparently they're quite delicious. We have grown successfully the tamarillo, another Solanum, Solanum potassium. This is the tree tomato.
The tree tomato, I was going to ask.
Coming in a couple of colors, orange and red at least, and does very well here. Quite a beautiful ornamental plant as well. Not quite sure what to do with that fruit. Pepino dulce, Solanum muricatum, a edible ground cover that Craig Elovich of agroforestry.net was very encouraging of us to establish in the food forest. I didn't have luck. It was never really happy in the seed garden, and now I'm thinking maybe it actually had nematode problems. We did try it in a couple different spots, but he sure has luck in the Big Island soils with that plant, which also produces a delicious cucumber-like fruit in terms of its quality, fresh and refreshing and juicy. So those are the edible ones I have on my list. As far as the medicinal plants, we mentioned before the popolo. This is one of our most common weeds in the Kalihiwai food forest, and was at a time one of the most important adjunct medicinal plants in the Hawaiian medicinal plant system for adding to other in combination with other herbs to give strength. Also very good for the lungs, the shiny nightshade, the glossy nightshade. Not to be confused with a very similar one, Solanum nigrum, which has more toxicity. And it's said that the fruits of that plant are a duller black and not as glossy. So that's a plant that came in post-European contact. And so with any Solanums, we need to be very careful that we're not confusing them. Other interesting medicinal plants, the mandrake and the belladonna. These are plants from Europe that were esteemed for their magical properties and their hallucinogenic properties, also potentially extremely toxic, used in various ceremonies. And I'll skip this, a wonderful excerpt, but our listeners can look into Paul Christian's The History and Practice of Magic for a really fun description of how the mandrake was used, and belladonna as well, and you mentioned tobacco. So plenty of ornamental plants as well, the tree datura being one of the most common ones, which actually is naturalized here but often grown from cuttings.
Is that what people call the angel trumpets?
Correct.
Yes.
So this is the pendant datura. True datura is a genus, but those are erect flowers mm-hmm. that face the sky, whereas the Brugmansia hang from the tree. Then we also have the night-blooming and the day-blooming jasmine, and that would be Cestrum nocturnum and diurnum, so for day and night. The nocturnum, also a very invasive plant, so definitely good not to introduce that into new areas, but such an intoxicating scent at nighttime. Great plant to have outside your bedroom window. And then the final one I'll mention is petunias, are also in Solanum as well.
Yeah, yeah, an unbelievable amount of ornamental plants going on in Solanum, besides our beloved love apples, as they're called, as they were introduced into Europe.
The tomatoes,
yes. The tomatoes were found in South America, and the Spanish are responsible for bringing them to Europe, mm-hmm. from whence they spread like wildfire. Mm-hmm. There's actually a really hilarious book out there called Tomato Rhapsody, which is sort of a historical novel of how the tomato arrived in Italy. Mm-hmm. A really fun, saucy read, for sure.
I noticed it happened in 1548. First arrived in Italy. So imagine any time before then, all Italian cuisine had no tomatoes in it.
Yes.
And even for a short time, at least, after it was introduced, it was only considered an ornamental plant.
That's right. That's right. It was confusing for people. There are so many alkaloids in the plant that the plant itself is toxic to eat. And even the fruits in the beginning before they became cultivated. And so that's a little bit of the discussion I'd like to go into. In tomatoes, we have such a specialization that's happened through our agricultural practices. And a lot of what's happened are fruit plants that have been bred for commercial agriculture, and this is a topic we've covered before, and then there's also breeding that happens for backyard gardening. And those are two pretty have separate needs in what you want out of the plant. In a commercial operation, you want a consistent size and shape. You would definitely like the ability for the fruit to ripen after picking, as chances are it's going to be shipped somewhere. And typically, although determinate plants, there's a difference in tomatoes, the determinate and the indeterminate type plants. And the determinate refers to a bush type, a bush habit. So the plant reaches a certain height, it sets fruit, sets all the fruit, ripens the fruit, and the plant is done. And these are ones that are commonly used in commercial agriculture for that reason. I don't know exactly how many people, commercial growers of tomatoes on our islands here, are using bush varieties versus the indeterminate or vining varieties. Mm-hmm. But I know in indoor culture, in greenhouse growing, indeterminate varieties get a little bit tricky because they're only fruiting on the leading branches, so you have these incredibly long vines. And the Sun Gold variety set the world's record for the longest cherry tomato indeterminate vine at 65 feet. So good luck.
That's a lot of greenhouse space.
That's a lot of greenhouse. You're making laps, basically, at that point, I think. And granted, that person was going for a world record tomato, but realistically, in our own backyard gardens, we can at least expect 20 feet out of those plants. So that's a lot of tomato to accommodate. And I tell people a lot of times when they're looking to cage their tomatoes that the little excuse me, cages that you buy at the hardware store, your tomato's going to outgrow that in probably 2 weeks or so. And I appreciate more using 6-foot hog fencing and making giant cylinders And in that case, you have 6 feet that it can grow up inside the cage, 6 feet it grows down outside the cage. That's 12 feet you've already accommodated for right there. And so something sturdy is really important. Home garden tomatoes are typically bred for flavor instead of shipping quality. They're best, they don't travel well, they ripen on the plant, they're best eaten right away.
Sometimes it's hard to even get them to travel from the bush to the kitchen.
To the kitchen. In fact, it's true.
They and go in the mouth first.
There's so many shapes and sizes, and depending on how much luck you have with growing your tomatoes, maybe they are just a garden snack and you don't even get enough to bring into the kitchen. Although we will talk about good growing techniques further in the upcoming weeks. So some of the tomato varieties that I've just done really well with here in the long season, summertime season, I prefer to go with some open pollinated or heirloom types. The black cherry is really delicious. That ripens to a purple brown color. Isis candy is kind of a yellowy orange cherry with a bit of a pink blush around the collar of the fruit. The Chadwick's red cherry is an incredible aggressive vine with lots of big red cherries. Also really like the Peace Vine cherry. That was the seed that made Seeds of Change Seed Company pretty famous. It's a great breeding. Those tend to be more like the smaller cherry tomatoes. And although there's some folks who want a bigger tomato, there's also some folks who really enjoy those teeny little berries. They're like berries. They're so sweet and delicious. And the Peace Vine cherry is the closest one I found to that, besides one that sort of naturalizes on its own. But in the other side of things, there are the F1 or the hybrid tomatoes that have been bred by crossing two parental lineages in a very classic and natural manner. And Juliet is definitely the winner on that level. It's a red grape tomato, and I've just had incredible, incredible yields with that particular tomato.
Thank you for sharing that, those tips with us, because in terms of selecting tomato varieties, there's more varieties of tomatoes out there than any other garden vegetable. And just in looking at the Seed Savers Exchange yearbook earlier today, 186 pages of the yearbook had tomatoes.
Tomatoes,
and
wow.
I estimated about 20 varieties per page, almost 4,000 varieties that have been saved. Now, there's probably some crossovers of ones that are very similar but have a different name. But goodness knows, people have been selecting tomatoes with much love, and they're very susceptible to nematodes, as I had mentioned other members of this family are. Do you find that the varieties that you mentioned do stand up well against nematodes?
Well, I make it a practice to keep nematodes out of my garden to begin with. And one of the things I've learned is that long-standing annuals, is what I would call them, yes, are most responsible. So we're fortunate here that annuals can become perennials with proper management. If we keep the flowers off of our basil plant, we can keep a basil plant going for a year or more. And if we keep picking fruits off of our tomatoes or beans, we can keep these plants going a really long time. But there is a point at which they've reached their peak. And after that, they're just not as strong. They become weakened. And at that point, they're more susceptible to diseases like this. So my remedy is to just not leave them in the ground for too long.
Right. Which I know you had a challenge with when you had a Roma tomato bush that was just going and going and going and going and going.
Exactly.
Sometimes
you don't,
it's hard to say goodbye to those,
yes,
those champions.
It's
of
true.
The garden.
It's
give
true.
Us so much.
But what we're better off doing, I think, in the long term for the bigger picture of our soil health is harvesting some really high quality seeds from some of the best fruits and starting again, knowing that we've selected even one round deeper and the next plant will be even better. Yeah, keep
good
it moving.
Advice. Thank
yeah.
you, Robin.
Yeah, renovations. And then if I have time, I'd love to just quickly talk about the capsicum family.
Yes.
Peppers are so well loved and so delicious. They make our cuisine so delicious. And in the capsicum world, there's quite a few species going on. One of them is Capsicum annuum, and that name insinuates annual also, but as I just discussed, we can certainly keep annual plants going longer, and if we keep them healthy and happy, they will do so. Some examples of the annuums are anchos, chili de arbol, all bell peppers in any shape, size, or color, serranos, cayennes. Those are some examples of capsicum annuums. They tend to have a smaller stature, at least compared to Capsicum chinense, which is the family, this species that holds varieties like habanero and the boot jolokia, otherwise known as the ghost pepper. These are absolute huge, they're shrubbery. We have to remember when we're planning our garden out, and that's part of why we go into all this Latin as well, just so you know, is when you're planning your garden, you're thinking you might be seed saving, it is important to pay attention to these Latin names so that we don't cross our seeds unintentionally, or have our seeds crossed unintentionally, I should say. So Capsicum chinense, Scotch bonnets, like I said, the habaneros, the fatalii, which was a favorite from the seed bank triums. Those are tall plants. They're 4 to 5 feet tall. So we want to accommodate those space-wise.
And they seem to be the longer-lived, very hardy, when all the annuums have sort of been taken down or have given all that they can give. The chinense are just maybe taking a little bit of a cat nap, and then they're back at it with another huge flush. And the trade-off, though, is you really got to love your hot peppers. Because they're
abundant.
They pack the heat, for sure.
Yes, and they're also abundant. And what's nice about the taller varieties, of which Capsicum baccatum, yet another species, is also tall like that, they hold their peppers up much higher off the ground, which I think gives them a little bit of easing from the bug pressure, from pepper weevil pressure and fruit fly pressure. So makes them a really quality plant to have in the garden. And the Aji Amarillo and the Aji Colorado certainly became instant favorites after the seed bank did its pepper triumphs. And also the Bishop's Crown. This is a pepper that circulates that you've seen it. You may not know it by that name, but it looks like a little turban, like it has a cap. It's sort of a looks like a fruit coming out of a fruit kind of pepper that is also in the baccatum family.
Cool. Yeah, and if you want to discover more of the varieties, the diversity of our peppers, the capsicums, have a look at this website, The Chili Man, THECHILIMAN, thechiliman.org. Fantastic database of just thousands of different kinds and all the different species, even if they're wild, uncultivated species, photographs you won't see anywhere else. One of the places you can see pictures of Capsicum pubescens, which only grows more in the subtropics, takes longer to come to fruition, and very interesting.
Furry
peppers.
Fruits, yes?
Yes.
Furry fruits,
so
interesting.
Plenty more plants we have to experiment with here on beautiful Kauai.
Okay, well, before we're all finished here for the day, I'd like to jump into the secrets of the soil builders.
Let's just remind our listeners, this is In the Garden on the Farm on KKCR. We want to invite you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy coming up at 1 o'clock, 1 to 3. And then from 3 to 5, we've got Shaka Kiaka for the Pupule show. So stay tuned. And, we're going to jump into a quick Secrets of the Soil Builders before we bid you a fond farewell until next week. So today we're going to focus in on wood ashes, a free fertilizer that we can all benefit from no matter where we live in the world. There's probably some wood around, unless you live in Norway or somewhere like that in the frozen tundra. We've got access to wood, and certainly with slash and burn agriculture, it has been recognized for millennia as an important soil additive and a good way for cycling nutrients.
Sure. Well, firstly, I'd like to start out by saying it is easy to overdose our soil with wood ash, and it actually winds up sterilizing it, which is definitely not what you're trying to do with wood ash. And this I got from Know Your Soil, Amigo Bob's awesome booklet on reading your soil test, interpreting and understanding your soil test. You can check out information about that book with him at orgamigo@gmail.com, orgamigo@gmail. And I'm sure he'd give you some more information about the book. It's important to get a soil test before we start just throwing things around out there in the garden. And so his recommendations, I'll just lay on you real quick in case you have had your soil test. And he recommends that 1 pound per 100 square feet if your soil test is between 100 and 150 parts per million of potassium when you have it tested. If there's more than 150 parts per million of potassium, use only half of that. So that's half a pound of wood ash, which is a very small amount. Although Paul made me realize wood ash is quite light, so volume-wise, it may look like a lot, but really for 100 square feet, what you're using is a very small amount.
And just as, yeah, it is important because as well, it's high in salts, which can be harmful to plants in high enough doses, mature plants, but it also can inhibit germination of seeds. And it's important if you're going to use wood ash to make sure that it hasn't been rained on, which seems to always happen. You go to the fire pit and you've got a wet, soggy pile of wood ash. Well, that's already had the potassium leached from it. And so you want to protect it from the rains until you apply it. It is 70. It does have 70% of the liming power of calcium carbonate, which is the standard by which all other liming ingredients are judged. So it is a fairly strong liming agent and can raise the pH quite dramatically in your soil, which is another reason to get a soil test and test your pH, because you don't want to send that pH too high. It is noted that young wood of trees is higher in potassium, so if you're making a choice and you're limiting your use of wood ash, you're certainly not limiting it probably because you're worried about adding too much potassium. So if you really want to get the bang for your buck, then use some of that pruning wood from young growth of woody plants. Apparently has higher potassium in it, probably because it's more active.
Yeah, and just to clarify, it doesn't mean green wood. It's cured, but not huge logs, okay. Smaller branches. I'm asking.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yes. And let's see, we want to make sure not to use treated lumber, charcoal briquettes, and also recommended in what I read was that cardboard is also not recommended because of the different chemicals that might be in those products. It is recommended for our solanaceous crops, members of the Solanaceae family that we've discussed earlier in the show. However, not for potatoes, as high alkalinity encourages potato scab. You can also sprinkle ashes around plants to deter maggots, aphids, slugs, snails, and cutworms. And as well, you can do some ashing of the insects themselves.
Yes, that's right. It's another way to use wood ash is in the biodynamic way, and you can read lots more about this by Maria Mathias Thun in their various books on gardening, but you'd like to collect at least 100 of the pests in question and burn them with a small amount of wood, so you kind of make a tiny fire. And I don't know, Paul was asking, how you get the bugs into the fire. You can't quite coax them in there. You're not going to convince them. So it might be that they have to be terminated before they get into the fire. However it is that you decide to collect them, you burn them with a small amount of wood, and then you collect that ash, and you can either dilute it in some water and use it as a foliar spray on the plants themselves, or broadcast spray the entire area, including the soil, and it is said that it will deter more of those pests from coming to visit your plants.
Very nice. So wood ash is a free amendment. We want to mention as well, it is a very good source of calcium, maybe about close to 25% calcium. The potassium quantity varies greatly depending on the material, and I've read that the ash from banana leaves is actually the highest in potassium of any source.
Yes, yes, I've heard this too.
So we want to thank you so much for tuning in to the show today. This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Paul and Robin. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land.